to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
I once talked with a woman who had spent the previous 3 days working with her accountant to complete donations so that her taxes could be reduced. She told me that she really didn't have that much money. It turns out it doesn't matter whether you have lots of money or you don't, you can still suffer from money anxiety. Almost all of us experience money anxiety at some time in our lives, and sometimes with far too much frequency. My guest today is Kurosh Ostolari, talking with me about a path to financial well-being he calls the Money Anxiety Cure. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we illuminate the power and importance of human emotions. We're broadcasting over blogtalkradio.com and emotionalpro.com, and we distribute through iTunes. We also invite you to call in toll-free to talk with our guest, 888-498-0570. And we know we all have issues with money, so I look forward to hearing from you. Well, Kurosh Ostolari is a resident of Sausalito, California, and he's also trained as a Spirit Rock Meditation Center Dharma leader and is a certified somatic therapist. He retired early from a successful career in real estate and has dedicated himself to the practice of cultivating mindfulness and helping his clients and students alleviate anxiety and achieve financial well-being. He offers spiritual and communication classes throughout the San Francisco Bay Area, and he's helped over 5,000 women in the Northern California prison system. He was recently recognized for his contribution to the inclusion of fairness, equal opportunity, and equality as he was awarded the 2015 Be the Dream Award. Be the Dream Awards are given to local businesses, government agencies, and leaders who have exemplified outstanding work on advancing social equity. His new book, The Money Anxiety Cure, A Path to Financial Well-Being, is available for pre-release at themoneyanxietycure.com. Kurosh Ostolari, welcome to Full Power Living.
Oh, thank you, Eileen. It's so wonderful to be on your show.
Thank you. I really enjoyed, or learned, let me just say, I learned, I delved more deeply inside myself as I read your book, The Money Anxiety Cure. And let me start off by noting that we live in a consumer society, and that focuses us, as you tell us, on what we don't have and can lead us to engage in compulsive spending, envy, low self-esteem, and it can also lead us to money anxiety, to concerns about whether we have enough money, and to making money more important than almost anything in life. And when I looked at it that way, I thought, that doesn't sound healthy at all.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned this, Eileen. You're absolutely right. I mean, we're living in a world, a wonderful country, by the way. I want to mention, as a first generation Iranian immigrant, I'm so grateful to be in this country. It's one of the most amazing places where almost anyone, you know, with the right opportunities and support and guidance and education can make it. But at the same time, if you're not vigilant and you're not really careful and don't pay attention to those, in my book, I call those, tune into your physical GPS and notice those blinking red lights that say, you know, you're spending too much, or you're not feeling good about this, or you're holding back, or maybe you're too greedy, or whatever it is that we tend to unconsciously kind of, behave with. I mean, in terms of our relationship with money, they do tend to play themselves out. And of course, you know, there's a lot of other great, good things that happen as well. A lot of us, you know, are aware and mindful, and we keep a budget and whatnot. But the book is really about, you know, how are we suffering around our relationship with money, and what are we doing that's not serving us, and what can we do to make a shift?
Yes, and you know, as I opened the show, I mentioned that people can feel anxious about money, whether they have a lot or they have a little. So it's clearly not about the amount of money, but more about our attitudes, beliefs, and relationship with money. Is that accurate?
You know, Eileen, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, really it's about the quality of life. I mean, whether you have a little or a lot, you know, as long as, and I mention this a lot in the book, you know, we're trying to find peace and balance around our relationship with money and create, you know, at the end of the day, our own unique vision of prosperity that's right for each of us. I mean, we're all so different. And not everybody wants to be a millionaire. And at the same time, many people who are struggling financially, men and women who, you know, feel like they can use a little bit more income or have more money in the bank, I think listening to that intuition and also paying attention to your bank statement is also very important. So you got to keep that balance.
Well, as I understand it, your point is to move money out of the primary position and into the position of being a tool, which we can use for our personal growth and evolution as well as our livelihood. But ultimately, the real goal that you keep pointing out is to have a calm, loving, peaceful, and heart-based journey through life and not to focus on amassing quantities of money.
You know, Eileen, that's so well put. I mean, at the end of the day, money is here to serve us. You know, it's here to act as a tool or a facilitator of conducting transactions. Basically, that's about it. I mean, it's come to make life easier for us so that we can go to the store and buy milk or pay our water bill or, you know, pay our mortgages. And, you know, unfortunately, it gets a bad rap, you know, given people's false perceptions or stories or conditions that they grew up with. I know I grew up with one where my dad kept saying money's the root of all evil and you should push it away. And unfortunately, my mom was a single mom raising three kids all by herself with no child support, so there was a lot of fear and contraction around it. So the story I heard from my mom, and by the way, she's a very successful woman right now, multimillionaire, but you know, and her story is fascinating. But growing up, I heard the story a lot, and very understandably so, that there's scarcity. You know, money's in short supply, and you have to struggle, and you have to hang on to it, and you have to sometimes, you know, the story was you got to hoard it, you know, because you have to save for a rainy day. And either of those stories, from one extreme to the other, when they're put on top of money, along with the anxiety, fear, and contraction that they create, tend to play themselves out in the world, and we see what happens when enough people live like that. It's not very wholesome. So, yes, we're trying to ultimately get to a place of peace, presence, connection, generosity, and each of us are different, and we're all trying to remind each other to have a more conscious and more, kind and present relationship with our finances so that we can have a peaceful, happy life.
So part of what you were just pointing to with your comments was something that you also discuss in the Money Anxiety Cure, which is about fear. So much of our relationship with money and prosperity is actually tied up with fear. Is that correct?
You know, it really is. Whether the fear is real or not, fear is, and when I say real or not, I mean there's a legitimate part of our life and DNA and biological makeup and mental perception that's there to protect us. You know, when there's a bus coming and you're crossing the street, you have to watch out. Or someone comes and out of nowhere and says, you know, would you lend me some money? And you tune in and it doesn't feel right and you get that fear impulse of, hey, you know what, don't go there, sort of like red blinking lights on the dash, and you listen to that fear, that's okay, that's healthy and that's normal. But when there's a fear based on a false perception that, oh my God, you know, this is there's doom and gloom out there, I'm never going to make it, there's lack, there's whatever your story is, everyone has their own unique story, and I would encourage your audience to really, really listen and tune into what's the old story or the old programming that's not necessarily serving them, and really, with compassion, ask yourself, how has this played itself out in the world with my life? how is it serving me, you'll notice that a lot of the stories and conditions, a lot of those mental perceptions are originated most often from a false place of fear. Fears that really, unless you sit with it, and I call it mindful, attentive presence, you know, you've got to take a lot of time to sit with these things. Sort of like meditation off the cushion, you know, we're doing mindfulness practice, you know, which is sort of like being aware and present with our finances and the emotional stuff. So we're not buying into the wrong story and then go out there and either spend too much or not take enough risks or, you know, not bring up that very important conversation with your partner or ask for a raise or whatever, because that's what fear does. The right kind of fear protects us. The wrong kind immobilizes us or puts us into this fight, flight, freeze mode, which you see a lot of out there where people are just running around like crazy.
About 3 weeks ago, I went on a cruise. I've been working on my own prosperity here, and I had the good fortune of having my sister offer me a gift of a week cruise in the Western Caribbean, which was big doings for me because I've had issues with receiving, which we can talk about later also. So I decided I would fill some of my bucket list. I'm in my early 70s, and I decided I'm going to go on a zip line, I'm going to swim with dolphins, I'm going to go cave floating, whatever. And I also ended up swimming with a jaguar. And what was fascinating to me is that I have been working on fear, and I developed a technique that actually I think may be similar to what you're talking about doing with mindfulness and meditation, which is my technique connects me with that which is so much larger than myself and assures me that I'm okay when I'm, you know, remembering that connection. And I had always thought that when I got into physical situations, maybe the fear would still be there. But it was fascinating to me to do all of those things and not have a second of fear. Mm-hmm. And what a relief that is.
Oh, I'm so glad you bring this up, Eileen. It really is a relief, isn't it? Because
yes,
literally, yeah, you probably felt it in your body. You notice you can breathe a lot easier. You can think more clearly. Did you notice all those new sensations? More relaxed. You could kind of.
Yeah, it was just like I was a kid again, going, "Oh, this is fun. Let's try this. Let's do this," and never thinking about, well, I could fall off, or, you know, I could get bitten or anything. It never even occurred to me.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, you know, it's interesting. We're in resonance because that's everything I try to talk about in this book is.
Uh-huh.
You know, bring out, you know, go into your little playground, create a playground, and start having fun with this exploration process around your journey, around your finances. It doesn't have to be so serious and intense, and, you know, it's like we've got enough to deal with that's stressful out there.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I mentioned in the book, there's a lot of inquiry questions, a lot of questions around, you know, where do you want to go? How do you want to get there? How can you have fun getting there? You know, what's your dream life look like? What would be your vision of prosperity that works for you? It's really all about kind of like learning how to have fun again and enjoy, somehow try. I mean, it's not easy. You know, really enjoy dropping into those places that you just described where you can say, you know what, I could let go of this, or I could maybe move a little forward around this, or maybe I can learn to loosen up. And I really do also encourage bringing out a journal, you know, art material, paint it, write it, dance with it, move with it. I mean, we're trying to approach this relationship in a different way, yeah, this relationship with money, and try to, you know, be a little bit more gentle with ourselves, given, you know, many of us have had to unravel a lot of old conditioning around it, and really see if we can have a new kind of joy and fun and peace around this, so that, you know, you could open up to this kind of generosity that you just mentioned earlier, around not just giving kindness and love and abundance to ourselves, but we can share it with others, and we can also receive. Like you received those tickets from your sister, which was lovely.
Yes, and yes, I did, yes. Well, you know, as you're talking, the words be-all, end-all came up in my mind, that we often make money the be-all, end-all, and the notion that came up is what you're really saying is put an end to having money be the be-all, end-all, and make yourself and your own journey the be-all, end-all.
Oh, Eileen, that's so lovely the way you just put that. Absolutely. I mean, money, again, I just want to mention this again to your audience. It's just the fuel that we put into our little, you know, vehicle to get us to move forward or go places where we can have a nice life, hang out with our grandchildren, take people on a little trip, have some money left over for our retirement, which, by the way, is important. I want to really emphasize, you don't have to make money the number one priority, but you got to hold it in balance with this other softer, compassionate, playful side, meaning save every month, invest every month, figure out a way to balance your checkbook and build that relationship around the nuts and bolts and get comfortable with the numbers. And balance it out with, you know, this other, you know, fun, playful part that's about, you know, I'm really out here, I'm alive in this very short life, which is, you know, it's very short and there's a lot of ups and downs, but I'm here to create this vision, this life of prosperity that feels good to me, and I may only need this much money so I could garden, I could paint, or I could go on trips or whatever. You have your own unique life. No financial planner, no one can tell you, and this is what where people went wrong in the last recession. They lost their own empowerment, and they listened to all these so-called experts tell them what to do. What I'm suggesting in this book is reconnect with yourself. Get really clear and regroup and reground yourself so you're in charge of your life and your finances, and then you could open up. If the numbers are hard and challenging, open up and ask for support. Don't isolate yourself. I mean, one of the biggest problems in the last recession is a lot of people just went into their little caves. Their boat was filling up with water. They never called. I didn't get any calls, and gosh, at least a dozen of my friends went under.
Oh, wow.
You know, people have too much shame, pride, and fear, and ego, you know, and this is a huge issue. Let's not repeat that again.
I think that's really wonderful. I mentioned to you right before the show that my son had closed down one business and opening up another, and he is compatible with what you're talking about here, but it's still very easy because he has a wife and two children. It is very easy for him to get into ego worrying about whether he can make it or not. And fortunately, he and I have a relationship where he'll call me up and I'll go, "You're in your ego. You need to get out of your ego. You're blocking the flow here." Talk to us about flow.
You know, and I know it's going to be hard maybe for some listeners to really relate to this, but I know deep down you know what I'm talking about. When I started my real estate career when I was 23 years old, I came at it from a lot of pushing, a lot of ego-driven stories that, you know, as an immigrant, you have to work extra hard and you have to make it, which is all true. But it got to the point where I stopped flowing. I was pushing so hard, I was noticing it in my body. This is where the anxiety comes. That's why I labeled this money anxiety. There was a lot of constriction in my chest. My breath was usually shallow. I felt my muscles were tight. I was experiencing a tremendous amount of stress. And I wasn't alone, by the way. A lot of folks I work with, millionaires who had plenty of money, were still pushing. They still are. And I realized this. I was stuck in this mode of pushing and not flowing. And then it wasn't until I started going on meditation retreats and getting counseling and support to really realize, wait a minute, you know, I left my body behind. It's like as if I don't even have a body. I didn't even connect with my body.
Wow.
And when I started learning how to breathe, how to slow down, how to meditate and be mindful of who I am and where I'm at and what's my relationship with money, it then things started flowing where I could work less, make twice as much money. I could be more relaxed when I met with clients. At that time, I was a commercial real estate agent, and clients would feel more relaxed around me. You know, it was that level of compassion that I had for myself that people also felt. And suddenly, gradually, you start going into the flow aspect of prosperity, and making money, and it doesn't become a struggle anymore. It just becomes this relationship that's about wholeness. It's about a path to financial well-being, which, by the way, is the subtitle of the book. It's not all about anxiety. It's about finding that path to financial well-being that is unique to you, but it integrates both the material bank account and the spiritual. I just want to emphasize that to your audience. It's really about having both those accounts in balance. And if one is a little off, okay, no problem. I mean, financially it's been tough. Well, you've got your spiritual bank account, which is your peaceful, calm, relaxed. You're connected with your community. You're grounded. You're doing the things you love. You'll be all right. But if you just totally avoid one or the other areas, totally avoid money or totally avoid your spiritual side, you're going to be in a deficit, and eventually your things are going to fall apart.
That's a really good point. And we're up to our first break, and one of the things that you say is that real success comes when we help ourselves to become successful people, live fulfilling lives ourselves, and then share our good feelings and prosperity with others. I'm talking today with Kurosh Ostowari, who's author of The Money Anxiety Cure. You're tuned to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back with The Money Anxiety Cure. Difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. We want to make it easy for you to follow and participate with Full Power Living Radio, so go to emotionalpro.com and sign up to be on our mailing list, and then we'll be able to send you details on upcoming shows, let you know when I release books, articles, and products, and keep you up to date on the CCFL Global Academy. Please sign up today, and while you're there, be sure to download my gift, which is the list of the signals of 7 common emotions. CCFL Global Academy is impacting the lives of parents, families, and individuals who are ready for help to navigate these transformational times and develop new, more heart-centered and effective ways to parent and lead families. There are 31 of us experts in a wide variety of disciplines, and we are sharing our wisdom, answering your questions, and addressing the issues that impact your life on a daily basis. I'm a founding expert, and my area of expertise that I'm offering there is emotional mastery, our emotional mastery and ending codependence. Our membership price is less than $1 a day. And if you're a member by tomorrow, you can catch my hour-long presentation on living a fearless life. That's at 12:30 Pacific time tomorrow. And next week, we're having a discussion and support session about how schools are impacting your children, your family life, and your child's future life. Your fastest way to visit the CCFL Global Academy is to click on the Academy logo on emotionalpro.com, and I hope to have you share my incredible information about living a fearless life with you starting tomorrow. Next week on Full Power Living, we're exploring a Pleiadian view of the transformations and issues facing us here on the Earth as I talk with Pia Orlean, PhD, and Cullen Smith, about their book, Healing Humanity by Remembering Who We Are. I have been mesmerized by what they offer reading their book, and I think you will be too. So that's next Thursday, March 26th, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern. My guest today is Kurosh Ostowari. If you're just joining us, Kurosh is author of The Money Anxiety Cure, as well as a successful San Francisco real estate developer, an award-winning life skills educator, and a Spirit Rock Meditation Center Dharma leader and certified somatic therapist. So, Kurosh, everyone has a money story, and it's usually based on our early life experiences and what we learn from our parents, and we end up then behaving in characteristic ways, both in life and around money. And you alluded to your story that your family immigrated from Iran. Tell us a little bit about your money story and what you've grappled with.
You know, I'm so glad you bring this up. I mean, it's in some ways similar to everyone's story, which is, you know, we grow up, you know, with our listening and hearing our parents either talk about money or fight about money or argue about money, and pretty soon as a kid, you know, that stuff registers. And unfortunately, I know for me, I grew up with, like I said, two very powerful messages. And my parents were, you know, pretty successful. My dad was an engineer and with Bechtel, and he was kind enough to bring us from Iran to San Francisco. Had a successful career, but unfortunately he left the family, and my mom had to raise three kids alone, and she became a very successful real estate entrepreneur, starting as a cleaner and then a beautician, and then of course getting her real estate license, and then of course she's my role model. But you know, the stories, you know, with the stories I heard, and many people probably can relate, were based a lot of times from fear. And I know you mentioned that in your break. You know, you do a lot of work around living a fearless life. Well, unfortunately, especially for women, and I do want to share this with the audience members who are ladies, that my mom got a huge download of negativity from a male-dominated society. And it's not much different here in America. It's pretty much the same, which is women need to be silent. They should, you know, repress their feelings around money. Don't even talk about it. Let the man take charge. And don't you dare ask for equal pay. On and on and on. I mean, we've heard this play out all over the place. But, you know, coming here in America, that, for me, was emotionally very painful. And one of the reasons I decided to become a somatic therapist and a Dharma leader and, you know, try to bridge the gap between the material and spiritual worlds, honestly, was because I had a lot of confusion myself around money. I mean, I grew up either greedy and very, like, fear-based, driven to hoard because my mom was scared and I took that programming on. And then there was a time when I became a spiritual monk. I mean, I basically went on retreat for years and years, and I became a renunciate and pushed everything away. And it wasn't until I finally woke up. This is kind of like the story of the Buddha, actually. I said, you know what? It's not about hanging on or pushing it away. It's about finding that balance, you know, the middle way. You know, where is the balance around both your finances, your spiritual life, and your relationships? And it hasn't been easy, I have to be honest with you, because you have to stay constantly vigilant. It's easy to slip. I mean, for me, it's easy to slip. I have a propensity towards greed. And, you know, the listeners can all decide what area they tend to lean towards. It could be aversion, pushing it away, or trying to grab onto it. And just staying vigilant and every day asking myself, am I coming from a balanced approach to my, you know, relating with my finances or the way I'm generous and sharing or the way I receive? Or am I coming from a contracted place? And again, I bring the body in as a somatic therapist because a lot of us have disconnected with, you know, our physical GPS, I call it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like those red blinking lights on the dash that say, hey, you know what, if this doesn't feel good, you know, you see the red lights, it means stop. Don't go there. Don't invest there. Don't, you know, don't put energy into that. But if you feel the green lights, well, then that means go forward. So we're trying to bring it all together and trying to, you know, have a balanced journey here with our finances.
One of the things that you tie in with greed in the money anxiety cure is a belief in scarcity. It's sort of like, I better get mine while the getting's good, so I'm sure I have what I need. And I think as I was reading your book, I realized that I don't think a lot of times we perceive ourselves as being greedy when we're thinking about scarcity.
You know, that's a good point. Everyone's story and journey is different, and my suggestion to your listeners is, you know, really, really take time to go into your money, I call it the money sanctuary, somewhere in your home or office or wherever, you can just sit and really reflect. You know, how is my story around lack or not enoughness or whatever I feel inside of myself or tend to project outward towards other people, how is that affecting my life, and how is that related to greed? I know for me it was a scarcity story.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough as an immigrant, so you better hurry. And this is a common story, by the way. Not just for immigrants. I mean, you see a lot of wealthy people out there who have plenty, and they just have not learned to stop and say, I have enough. And by the way, that's a sign of true wealth, is to know when you have enough and to say, you know what, it's time to give back. For me, it was, you know, I learned the hard way. I collapsed. I, you know, lost all my properties in some of the recessions. I didn't manage my relationships well. And, you know, some of us hit bottom. But you don't have to. You don't have to let the boat sink until you wake up. I mean, try to wake up now and try to have a full, complete, prosperous life, because, you know, life is short.
As a therapist, I have long observed that people dislike change so much, Kirosh, that they literally hold on to their current way of operating until they get to the point where the pain of turning loose finally appears to not be any worse than the pain of staying where they are. That we count on that pain to motivate us, and I totally agree with you that we are much better off if we turn loose before the pain gets to that level.
You know, it's so good you mentioned that, Eileen. I mean, when you see those red blinking lights on your dash in your car, most of us pull over and mm-hmm. you know, you see steam coming out. Why is it we don't do that with our own lives? Why is it when you notice constriction in your chest or, the anxiety signals, and by the way, this is the body's way of signaling to you, there's something not working. Something is wrong. I mean, stress is the body's way of communicating, hey, you know what, there's something going on that's not working out. Why not pull over and take a breath, take inventory, get clear, get comfortable, regroup, and then decide how you're going to go forward? I don't understand, honestly, why we wouldn't do that, because life is so precious and it's so wonderful. And one last thing I want to say, it's very, very hard to make good decisions, especially financial decisions, when you're coming from that place of anxiety, stress, and collapse. I don't see how you can make a good decision because, you know, when you're under a lot of pressure, and this is why I teach a lot of women in jail how to manage stress, because they ended up there. Rich or poor, by the way, is not just poor people. A lot of wealthy people end up in jail. It's because they never learn how to pause, and eventually it got so bad they numbed out or they acted out, and then they fell through the cracks. Why let yourself fall through the cracks or get hurt or do something that will also hurt other people around you and avoid that in the first place and try a different approach? I don't understand.
Aren't you really pointing out an interesting dichotomy that we live with? This is what I'm thinking about as I'm listening to you. The dichotomy is that as we try to amass piles of money and deal with our concerns about scarcity and so forth, we are really thinking a lot about ourselves. And when we're not paying attention to the GPS, when we're not noticing what's happening to us, we're not paying attention to ourselves at all. We're not loving ourselves. It's a funny kind of juxtaposition.
It really is. I mean, you know, I think the reason I have all these exercises in the book, I mean, every chapter's got a lot of exercises around really exploring and asking yourself, really, where am I? You know, how do you define prosperity? What is your unique gift to this world? How is your job or your current financial situation helping you? or helping you realize your goal, or I bring up questions around your lifestyle or your you know, how you're feeling with your spiritual situation, you know, you know, it's really about being honest and direct with yourself by inquiring. I mean, this is what we do when we meditate. A lot of times we sit and we inquire. Ah, you know, this doesn't feel good or this feels right. I'm not going to judge myself, but I'm just going to notice these sensations. And then, you know, you cultivate this mindful, attentive awareness. Almost, it's like rewiring your brain. You're creating a new neural pathway to help yourself approach your situation differently, rather than from the old habitual way of struggle, push, deny, collapse, fight, flight, freeze. You're pausing, you're breathing, you're holding that water bill or mortgage statement, and you're breathing and you're feeling gratitude. And then when you write out the check, I mean, sort of like meditation in practice, you're feeling the pen in your hand and you're writing it out with joy and appreciation and gratitude. And then you're creating a new neural pathway. And then from there, if you do that even once a week, or even hopefully every day, if you can be that present and aware and attentive, you're going to start having a new relationship with money, because it's no longer about struggling and stressing out about it.
The things I find interesting and also for me makes it kind of easier to understand what you're talking about is the picture that money and prosperity really are not different than any other area of living. Money really just has enough emotional energy tied to it that we pay attention to it more. And if we can get ourselves in a what you might call a right relationship with money, then we are also able to get into a right relationship with ourselves and with our world. Would you agree or disagree with that statement?
No, I agree, Eileen. I think money is so symbolic and so representative of so much of what the world, identifies as power, security, all that. And those are all true, but really, really, the way I see it now is that money is really here to serve us. You know, it's an agent for transformation and change, and here to offer us freedom and choice. And again, it's what do we put on top of it? You know, what are the stories? What are the conditions? Whether they're positive or negative, it's just to notice and be aware of you know, how we're relating to it. It's just like a person. I mean, if money was a person, you know, what kind of relationship would you have with it? You know, would it be flowing? Would you guys go out and you know, you whip out that $5 and maybe hand it out to someone who needs it? Or would you buy some ice cream? Would you treat yourself? Or you know, is it tight, difficult, constricted? It's up to each individual. And this is what I emphasize in this book. I'm trying to help people find empowerment and find their clarity and their own purpose and journey around money, and not to depend on other people who you know, tend to want to, I hate to say this, not everyone, but some of them want to take advantage of disempowered consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But really, money gets a bad rap. It's here to serve us. The question is, where are you in your relationship with it, and what do you need to do with it and to shift that relationship so it's a wonderful, loving, beautiful relationship? And it does ebb and flow. I mean, I do want to emphasize that when the money goes up and down, just like the stock market, do you react, or do you, you know, is your emotions connected to those ups and downs, or are you at peace with the ebbs and flows around money?
Mm-hmm.
Can you stay present and see the changes all around you, not just around money, but around everything that money's connected to, stocks, bonds, your investment portfolio, your savings account, and can you, without reacting, And again, we have exercises in the book around how to deal with this. Can you come from a place of wholeness, connection, and that, like you said earlier, that prosperity mindset, and be able to, approach it with a more mindful, attentive, compassionate way.
Well, it sounds really wonderful. I've been working on issues of money for many, many years, having come from a family that lived in tremendous scarcity and lack, and who every time I made money, took money away from me, so left me in debt for years and years and years and not knowing how to get out. So this is a really important topic for me, and I'm excited to add your wonderful approach to some of the things that I've learned. It's time for our next break. I'm talking today with Kurosh Ostowari, who's author of The Money Anxiety Cure. If you'd like to talk with Kurosh Ostowari directly, call 888-498-0570. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back. Everybody feels anger. But if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. My guest today is Kurosh Ostowari, author of The Money Anxiety Cure, and his website is themoneyanxietycure.com. So, Kurosh, Warren Buffett warns people to stay away from credit cards. And you say, quote, "Often credit cards allow us to pretend we have more money than we actually have." And in the way you're describing this, credit cards then allow us to be less conscious and present and may tend to tempt us to make purchases that aren't really connected with our deepest values. It's important to stay connected with our deep values. Is that correct?
Well, Eileen, I'm so glad you bring this up. I mean, the issue is that, yes, of course, I'm with you on that, but you have to understand that the system we're living in, which, by the way, again, I'm grateful to be in this amazing country that gives everyone such an opportunity to make it in any way you want, but at the same time, they feed off of people's insecurities, fear, disconnection, unclarity, lack of self-worth, and when you get a credit card and you're not connected with yourself, you're not feeling whole and already prosperous, and then you see this plastic. It's got a bunch of numbers attached to it, and you're encouraged. You know, I mean, this is what a lot of corporations who want to feed off of people's insecurities. They encourage you, and people buy into it. Again, we're not victims. They go out and they overdo it. They overconsume, overshop, sort of like shopping therapy. You know, let's go out to the mall and try to feel better. And if I buy an extra dress, which is important. I mean, I'm not saying don't buy stuff. But really ask yourself, is this purchase feeding a deeper part of me that I need and appreciate? You know, you treat yourself, which is great. I encourage that in the book. But are you doing it to fill some void? Are you doing it to get some kind of an ego, hungry satisfaction type need? Or is it coming from a wholesome place? You have to distinguish between the two. Otherwise, you're going to get... And we're seeing it happen again in this economy. People are back out there consuming, way over-consuming, taking on way too much debt. The same cycles that we saw in the last recession could be possibly happening again. And of course, corporations need to make money. A lot of corporations encourage people to not be clear about why they're making these purchases. And so this is the economy we're in. But we have to be vigilant. We can't be victims. And we have to wake up so we can make better choices.
Mm-hmm. You also make the point, and I totally agree with you on this, purchasing experiences is much more lasting than purchasing things. And I'm sitting here, like in September, I went to Ireland to give a speech in a parenting conference, and I asked my son if I could take my 8-year-old granddaughter, and she went with me. And that experience is just irreplaceable. So I really like your suggestion on that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, at the end of the day, all these material things are going to go. I mean, it's funny. We bought a robot for my nephew, this little 3-foot robot for his birthday. It cost like $400. Mm. And he played with it. He was 14 at the time. He played with it for 2 days, and the thing was already in the closet.
Oh, wow.
And then I was thinking, how many of us are the same way? We buy stuff, we use it, we have this kind of initial thrill, and then suddenly it's gone, and the thrill goes away. I don't care if it's a doll, robot. It doesn't mean you shouldn't buy stuff for your kids, but, you buy that shiny new convertible, and you think, it's going to make you happy. Yes, it will for a little while, but it doesn't last, because nothing in this material world is permanent, and we're dealing with an underlying legitimate fear and concern that things are all going to eventually leave you. So what doesn't leave us? Well, I'm a believer in investing in education. I think it's the number one investment. What is it that you love that will support your prosperity and your connection? I'm a believer in generosity. And so if you're feeling abundant, just like the Buddha and many spiritual teachers said, if you have a lot, then share a lot, give a lot, help people have good experiences. If you have a little, give a little. If you're wealthy and you're already, I'm encouraging a lot of landlords because I'm doing this. If you have a lot, way more money than you need, offer some subsidized housing for some artist who's mm-hmm. not a tech person in San Francisco, who doesn't make $100,000, $200,000 a year. Give them some support. Any experience that fills your spiritual bank account, a creative bank account, is priceless.
Mm-hmm. You're reminding me just this morning, I have a granddaughter who's graduating from high school this year, and she tested to be a finalist in the National Merit Scholarship Program, and she's been offered a full ride, 4-year scholarship to a large university that includes study abroad and all kinds of things. It's just an amazing thing. But the first thing that she did once she knew that her family was alleviated of paying for her tuition was to turn to her mother and say, I want time with you. I want you to go backpacking with me for a month this summer. I want you to stop work, and I want you to come and spend time with me. And it really warmed my heart to hear that story. That's the kind of thing, once we deal with the straight finances, we can see more clearly what really matters to us.
Eileen, I'm so glad you bring this up. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about freedom. What are we doing right now that leads and supports our freedom, whether it's freedom of time, freedom of choice, freedom of connection? And if our choices, our financial relationships, if they're leading us to more freedom, then thank God. If they're not, and yet you still have this vision of prosperity that's unique for you. I mean, everybody's different. Not everybody wants to be a high-tech person. Some people want to be gardeners. I don't care what you end up doing. As long as you're doing it so that it leads to more freedom, more joy, more love, and of course more free time, then you've got it made, because there are people out there with billions of dollars. In fact, I have a friend, I just visited him, he's got all this real estate, waterfront real estate. He was running around like crazy, and I was wondering, here you are, you have all this wealth, you really don't have any time. What's the point? What's the point? You're going to die someday. You're going to have all this wealth, and you haven't spent time with your grandchildren. You're not spending time with yourself. I mean, that's the addictive, compulsive part of society that we're trying to understand. And, of course, it's easy to go to the other extreme and deny and give it all up and become a renunciate and not want to be in the world. That's just as painful and difficult. I know plenty of people in that situation, and I'm not saying that's healthy either.
Yes, or lean on other people, perhaps.
Or lean on other people. There's a lot of passive-aggressive behavior, especially in spiritual, I'm not judging, but a lot, especially in spiritual communities, people think, you know, because I meditated and, you know, and did all the spiritual work, I can just walk into a Whole Foods and meditate, and a loaf of bread's going to fall out of the sky. They're not going to give it to you. They're going to call the cops.
You know, when my son was in seventh grade, he wasn't doing very well in school, not as well as I knew he was capable of, and I asked him about it, and he said, "Mom, it's just so much work." And so I thought about it for about a day, and I said, "You know what? Being on the earth is actually about work. Even if you decide to drop out and become a drug addict, you will still need to find a place to live. You'll need to find money to support your drug habit. You'll need to stay out of the way of the bad guys." So here's the good news and the bad news, that our world is about work. But the real question is, where do you want your work to take you?
Well, yeah, I'm so glad you bring this up. It's about effort. And I mention a lot in the book about skillful effort, skillful action. And it's not about, yes, we have to work, but we have to work in a way that there's alignment. I mentioned, and you mentioned earlier, around our values,
mm-hmm.
our goals, our intentions, our community. As long as we're working in a way that supports all those areas, and you're not compromising, and you're not falling off the path, and if you do, it's okay, just getting up and getting back on track. But at the end of the day, that's all we're all trying to do, because life is short. We're all going to, you know, I mean, let's be honest, we're all going to die. What do you want to leave? You know, what kind of experience you want to have while you're on the path, and what do you want to leave behind in terms of how you want people to know who you were? You
right.
know, it's not about the money that you leave behind. It's not, you know, it's about, and money is important. Again, I'm trying to emphasize, please, get help, get support, focus, sit down, have a budget, start making a financial plan, have a good relationship with your finances. But this other part that you need to kind of hold it with, you know, that ability to, you know, it's like you have your foot on the gas pedal, but you're not like you're not flooring it, you know, and you're not keeping your other foot on the brake at the same time. You're kind of just like playing with that energy. You know, how much do I go forward? How much do I pause? Do I rest today? Do I go out and act, you know, be more generous, and maybe do I, you know, bring up that conversation with my husband or wife around money or getting a raise? Whatever you need that you've been avoiding, now's the time. You know, it doesn't help to put the stuff off.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that ties in. We have time for one more question. You mentioned toward the end of the Money Anxiety Cure, there's a new financial paradigm beginning to take shape in our world. You say it's characterized by greater generosity, more knowledge, less greed, and a mindful stewardship of Earth's resources. And you give, say, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates as examples of people participating in that paradigm. Talk to me a bit about that paradigm.
I think each of us needs to decide, number one, where is our balanced relationship with our finances, and what does our vision need to look like around prosperity? What I love about these two wealthiest guys in the world is that they're giving all their money away. And, again, it doesn't have to be billions of dollars. It could be time, energy, it could be a few dollars. The act of generosity, believe it or not, that comes to me, the foundation of it is from gratitude. You know, when you have enough gratitude and you make a list every day of what you're grateful for, then you can feel generous. How do you give of whatever you have that makes you feel even better? Now, giving, of course, generosity is not just about giving. It's how to stay open to receiving, as you said earlier about your sister giving you that ticket. That balance between generosity of giving, receiving, however way that looks for you, is true wealth, because what it does is it's like spreading the energy of love and abundance wherever you're at, and however way you do it. It could just be a smile. It could just be calling a friend that may need some support, or it could be just giving some time to your community, or maybe showing up and helping a neighbor. I mean, whatever your unique approach is, please follow that, because that's the right way for you. And Bill Gates has his way, and Warren Buffett has their way, but I admire them, because, you know, at the end of the day, they're giving all their money away to help humanity and help the planet.
Mm-hmm. Well,
one last thing I want to say, and I'm doing that with the women at the jails, and I'm giving a lot of my time for free, just because, you know what, I've been fortunate, and I want to help people at that level of humanity that are suffering, that could use our support. So each of us are different.
Well, and let me point out, however, as a psychotherapist over the last 42 years, one of the primary things I suggest to people who are depressed and down and need a lift is to go help somebody else doing what you do there, which is selfless service. It ends up that when you do selfless service, you do get a lot, but the idea behind selfless service, of course, is to give for the sake of giving, which I find really refreshing.
I'm with you. Yeah, so let's practice that. I think this is the new paradigm. It's all these things we discussed on your show, Eileen, and if we can just all keep, you know, remember all these different tips and tools, we'll be okay. And if you don't, be gentle with yourself. I mean, you know.
All right. Well, this our program is recorded, so you can go back also, those of you who are listening, and listen to these ideas over again. So, Kirosh, your approach to money and prosperity I find really refreshing. The exercises you give to help people look inside are very effective, and they actually help you change the drivers that have been shaping our relationship with money and prosperity. And I know it needs to occur over time, but I want to thank you for establishing a roadmap to get us started on this journey to real prosperity, both financial and spiritual. So thank you for writing the Money Anxiety Cure. Let me remind people that your website is themoneyanxietycure.com. And also thank you for being with us here on Full Power Living today.
Oh, thank you so much, Eileen. I appreciate it. And we do have a book signing at the Book Passage on the 12th of April. If anyone is interested, please join us there, and it'd be fun to have you.
Okay. Is that the one in San Francisco or Corte Madera?
Corte Madera at 11 o'clock on April 12th. Love to have you there.
All right. Wonderful. Good to know about that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Eileen. Have a lovely day. Appreciate it.
All right. Next week, listen to Full Power Living as Pia Orlean, PhD, and Cullen Smith talk with me regarding the Pleiadian view of the new reality as we discuss ideas from Healing Humanity by Remembering Who We Are. That's next Thursday, March 26th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time and noon Eastern. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer. Thank you once again, Paul, for now. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.